It costs money to hire. You have to have training, equipment, investment, especially that slow start. You need to make sure you have some capital when you make that first hire, and then make sure you have a pipeline to keep them busy. And then eventually you can start focusing on the business and sales and create that balance.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And I've got another great guest joining us today. What you're going to get from this podcast and from this gentleman is knowledge and information and hopefully a mindset shift or a paradigm shift on the importance of chasing the experience and not the money. And as entrepreneurs, as business owners, I'll admit part of the reason I got into business initially was for the potential money. And when I thought more about it, it was more for the time freedom and what I could provide for my family. But as I've gone through that journey, I realized that the real value was in those experiences and in that journey. So really excited to get into it with our guest today. Brad, appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, excited to be here, Dallin. Thanks for having me.
So Brad, why don't you take the next couple minutes and just share with our listener a little bit about who you are and what you do and who you serve.
Sure. So again, Brad Levitt, I own a company by the name of Finer Touch Construction. Most of us know us as AFT Construction through all the social media handles. And primarily we build luxury product all throughout Phoenix metro area. We also do some commercial, and I've been building here in Phoenix for 20 years, you know, professionally out of college, started AFT 10 years ago. So we've hit our 10-year anniversary, and now we're a growing firm, you know, 21 employees, amazing team. And again, just as we look at projects, you know, a big thing for us is that I think a lot of builders, and not to make this builder specific because I'm not going to, but what's interesting when I speak to builders, I think a lot of us are focused on construction, right? We're focused on that element. But what we fail to realize is that we're business owners that just happen to focus on construction. And it was really, that was a big turning point in my career, understanding that, you know what, I'm a business owner, and there's concepts, there's systems, there's organization, there's marketing strategies from all different companies. And if I can understand that first and foremost, I'm a business owner, I just happen to focus on construction. I think any entrepreneur, if they really understand at the core, they need to understand business and systems and financials. And then now they can really strategize and build a company with great culture, great teamwork, and essentially now focus on what your true goal is, right? What your true, where you understand your lane, where you should be successful, and, you know, and then you can market to that.
Very well said. I mean, it's more than just knowing how to throw up walls, roof, paint, and do all that construction stuff, right? That's the how and the what that you do, but there's so much more that goes into running a successful business. Consider it maybe a software developer, right? Like they might have the technical knowledge and experience to be able to design and create a software, but how do you market it? There's so many other aspects to it. So I appreciate you bringing that up because that's really a core part of business and entrepreneurship. We often choose different vehicles to use, but at the root of it, you've got to know how to communicate. You got to know how to hire and fire. You've got to know how to scale. You got to know how to market. You've got to create an overall good experience for the consumer of whatever that product is that you're providing. So 20 years in Phoenix, you've probably seen quite a bit of growth over the last 20 years then in the real estate here.
Oh, it's completely changed. It's funny, when I grew up in San Diego, I'm from California originally and moved here 2005. So yeah, about 18 years now. And what's interesting is not everyone, I mean, this is generally speaking, Phoenix is a big city, but a lot of Phoenix was built on construction and real estate and development back in the early 2000s, right? And, you know, the housing crisis was a huge issue for all of us that here, especially me, being that this is my core business, right? Being in this industry. But what's interesting is we've seen a lot of development from tech companies moving out here and financial companies. So my clients in the past, that would typically be in my network, that's totally changed. Like now we're seeing a lot of companies move their businesses here and employees. And structurally, that's changed really the health of the market in Phoenix. And of course, that's been when you look at the pandemic and you look at people relocating and being a warm weather. And of course, we're fortunate to have a lot of second homes, right? People that are from, you know, maybe colder climates such as the Midwest. And so Phoenix has definitely grown tremendously. I just think of my commute's a lot better today than it was 20 years ago, even though it's more crowded because there's more freeways now. You know, a lot of those loops are built out, which is nice.
I love that. Yeah, back in 08, Phoenix got hit hard because, as to your point, a lot of the economy was tied to rooftops. It was tied to construction. So when the housing market crashed, so did all the jobs. And what Arizona did is they said, hey, they came together and they're like, we can't go through that again. We can't experience that. And so they started strategizing and figuring out what they needed to do to bring in more businesses. And we're seeing that there's a lot of tech. We've got this massive Taiwan semiconductor plant going up in North Phoenix. We've got manufacturing plants down in Casa Grande and industrial going up everywhere. It's absolutely incredible. So I'm sure a fascinating time to be a contractor over the last 20 years, but let's take it back now, Brad. Like you said, you got into contracting right out of college. Was this a path you always wanted to go down, or what was it that started you in this direction?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up, you know, my grandfather was an entrepreneur. He was in the Navy. He was born in Nevada, met his wife in Boston, who was my grandma, and both of them ended up being stationed in Los Angeles and then eventually San Diego. And they started an electrical company, retired from the Navy, started an electrical company, had six boys. My dad was the youngest. And all of them became electricians. And so through high school, I worked as an electrician. And to be honest, I didn't like it. And maybe just because I was a teenager and a kid and you're out there and it's like, you know, you'd rather be at the beach or hanging out with friends and, you know, I'm out working. But I will say, looking back, there was a lot of value I learned, you know, from just hard work, you know, especially being in the trades and learning, you know, having my tool bag on. And I was fortunate to work on some great projects, you know, in La Jolla and Coronado and Rancho Santa Fe and Carlsbad and these amazing communities in San Diego, which are great, you know, and it was really fun working on these projects. And I remember just before college, and I was working on this incredible project in Rancho Santa Fe, and there was a superintendent. You know, I didn't really know what that was at the time, and he was kind of directing us what to do. And of course, me being a younger cousin, I'm the one that had to go under the house and in the attic and,
oh yeah,
you know, do all the groundworks. I always pulled the short straw there. And I remember thinking, like, I want to be that guy. I want to be the one who's like directing everybody, not crawling under this house, especially in Coronado where, you know, you can find some mice and snakes down there and stuff. So anyways, going to college, you know, I thought about going into business, but what I ended up doing is I studied construction management up at BYU. So I went to Utah, did construction management, took a minor in business in Spanish because I spoke Spanish, and then ended up moving to Phoenix in 2005. And with the goal that at the time in 2005, the housing market was still incredibly strong at the time. It hadn't. 2006 is kind of when it started to waver a little bit. And then, of course, we know what happened in 2008. But at the time, there were opportunities in Vegas and Southern California and Florida and Texas. And I wanted to be in a warm climate. I'm just not a fan of the cold. So Arizona was the choice. I want to get into custom building. And that's kind of go to where I had some good mentors. And like you led off with the podcast, just told chase experience, not money. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But that's really what catapulted me into starting AFT.
It seems like from a young age, obviously you were involved in construction, but you wanted to be a part of the different side of it rather than being the one crawling down in the crawl spaces and doing all the dirty grunt work. You wanted to run it and to manage it, but you stuck with that for the last 20 years. Doesn't seem like you really wavered at all from that dream, from that idea. Is that correct?
It's correct. We may look at someone successful, right? And you think, oh, it's not that it's not attainable or that it's, you know, we don't realize just how long of a process it is in most cases, right? That we're looking for maybe a shortcut or a quick way in. And the reality is, like, I look at myself today and there's still so much experience and knowledge on chasing, right? To understand, not just, as I mentioned leading off, not just with my construction company and construction knowledge, but also business knowledge and how to lead people and how to direct and create a culture where people are inspired, where they have the tools and resources that accessible and available to them so that they can perform, so that they're not discouraged. I mean, the reality is construction is a tough industry. I don't think I realized how hard it was back then. I didn't realize how hard it'd be now. And it's been just exacerbated with supply chain limitations, labor limitations, cost, inflation. It's just, it's never been more difficult to build a home today than I've experienced, you know, in my entire career.
I'm sure it keeps you on your toes, having to pivot to whatever's going on all around it. So share with us what that job looked like when you moved here to Phoenix and you started working, I'm assuming as a construction manager. What did that job look like? And then how did you transition? What was it that made you decide to start your own company?
Good question. So for me, I think it was really valuable for me the way that I was fortunate to kind of come into this. And what I mean by that is that I always wanted to build luxury product or custom homes, you know, one of a kind, things that are really challenging. But the reality is, even if that's your end goal, and the reason I say chase experience, I actually went out of college doing production homes. So you think about a big production builder where they're buying the land, You know, they have three or four floor plans. You can make minor, not really floor plan modifications, but minor options, and you're picking your finishes. But it's pretty, you know, here's option A, B, C. The reason that's so valuable is because you have to understand other ways to structure your business. What I really appreciate about that year out of college that I was doing production homes, I think there was one point I had like 22 homes under construction. And you really have to understand, I mean, these may not be 20,000 square feet. They may not be in the hillside, you know, for lack of a better word, that may be cookie cutter like track home, but you have to understand scheduling, right? The core to be successful in our business, you have to understand scheduling and, you know, how to put together a Gantt chart and how to organize people and how to communicate and how to prioritize and how to manage many clients, right? And their expectations and set those and communicate. And so at the core of running any business, just understanding flow, and that was super valuable. So after a year of doing that, of doing production homes, I kind of got this chance where there's a hotel resort in Paradise Valley by the name of Omni Montelusi, and it's this $350 million hotel and resort on Lincoln and Tatum. And I was fortunate to come in. And again, this is how my interview went. I showed up for the interview, and it wasn't a traditional, we had the owner of the company, we had the director of operations sitting there in a room with me. And it wasn't like, okay, Brad, here's your resume, tell us about your experience. They just put up on the board and they said, okay, Brad, here's Microsoft Project, build me a schedule. Build me right now, you know, like if we're doing a hotel room or we're doing, at this hotel, there were actually 34 villas, so people that live at the hotel full time. So they said, build a schedule. So fortunately, again, I went to college, so I understood scheduling. I'd done it, you know, at the production home. So I just went in there and essentially, you know, built the schedule right in front of them. And they're like, you're hired. My interview was about 15 minutes and it was just a demo. And what's funny, just to deviate a little bit, is I know interior designers that when they're hiring, not only they're looking from a personality standpoint, but they're looking at, here's my challenge to you. I'm not just going to Q&A you the whole time. I want you to actually do a design here. What will you do? What do you see here? You know? And so it's actually real life experience. And that was valuable because that got me in the door to work on this amazing project, which then catapulted the rest of my career.
I think that interview shows you and stresses the importance of scheduling and construction, right? Like you can have this knowledge of construction. You can know how to throw up drywall. You can understand the codes and what needs to be done. But if you're not effective and efficient with your scheduling, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have on the specific trades. Would you agree?
The thing is, you can't make money. Not only can you not make money, you're going to have clients super upset with you. You're going to have investors and banks. And, you know, any project that's happening, it doesn't matter if you're on a family level bill in a single family luxury home. It doesn't matter if you're in a hotel, a restaurant, a commercial development, a shopping mall, Walmart. You know, the reason that Walmart has massive liquidated damages in the contract is because as a company, they're structuring all their trucks to come out and stock this Walmart. So if you're not done, it's costing them money every day. And so scheduling at the core, and this is what's amazing about my field where I really, with my team, it's just a constant thing. If you don't have a schedule, if you don't have a game plan, and this is just a life lesson in general, if you don't have a roadmap of what you want to accomplish and how you're going to get there, what are you doing? Like you can't track it. You can't even know if you're going in the right direction. You can't even track if you can make yourself accountable. We can't make trades accountable. We can't make, you know, our team accountable. And the problem with construction is that, especially in residential, it's really easy where a client's just anxious to get started and get moving on their project, that we want to jump in and get going without having all the information, without having design, without having decisions made. And then you can't build an accurate schedule. You end up getting stonewalled. You have delays. I can't point the finger and say, Dallin, well, you didn't decide this, so it's delaying me, because you're like, what are you talking about? You know, but if I have a schedule, if it's given to the client, we can track it. The minute you make a change, we can track it. And so at the core, scheduling is not just construction, but it's just everything. I mean, you mentioned software company. If they don't understand, you know, whether it be software they're releasing or apps on the app store, and they're not following that process and they're not hitting those deadlines, it's just, you know, that's revenue that's not being realized because you're just not prepared for it.
So for the listener or the business owner that's in a similar industry or needs to hear this about scheduling, is there a advice, software, tool, trick? What's something that you could share with that person to up their scheduling game or to improve it?
Yeah, well, it's funny. So I think specifically for construction, I mean, this is something that we, part of this reason is a lot of people have asked, hey, Brad, how, you know, is there a class on this? Is there a course? We've actually started this Contractor Coalition Summit, which I don't have to spend time on. But part of this summit is we actually teach contractors what it is to do to schedule by the term of pool plan scheduling. And that's how we're pulling in everyone that's involved in scheduling it. And I won't spend too much time on that. But the reality is there are resources specifically to construction and seminars and live education that you can go in and get knowledge. But again, at the core, right, you have to have a good understanding of construction if that's your business. That's my business. But any business, this is why you chase experience. You understand the ins and outs of building a home, of building software, right? In any industry, just understanding that flowchart. Really, if you can understand how to schedule, if you can understand how to estimate, and then, as you mentioned, hiring and firing, right? You're slow to hire, quick to fire. You have clear outlines for your employees. You know, if they really understand, if they believe in the product that you have, that you are doing, if they believe in not just the product, but they have a clear understanding of their role, those are the two things they need. If they have that, now you have company culture. And so these are just core elements of any business that'll help you be successful.
Love it. So talk about this transition into starting AFT. What was it that led you to decide to step out of the, I don't know if you were a W-2,
Okay.
So what was it that led you to step out of that world and say, hey, I'm going to go for it and I'm going to create my own?
Well, you know, I think that entrepreneurship is, it's either naturally born. I think some people realize, hey, I'm a natural entrepreneur. I can't work for someone, so I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And then that's one aspect, I think, of human mentality. And another one is you're forced into it. And I think maybe for me, it's a little bit of both, probably more the force into it, to be honest, because what was happening is, keep in mind that after I'd spent time with that firm for 5 years, and I don't want to say the writing was on the wall, but there was just, the market was not great. There wasn't a lot of work and foresight done in business development and planning, right? They were super busy at the time. So they're just feeding that, not anticipating a recession would happen. And now you're trying to figure out, okay, we're going from 300 employees to 35. Like, it was a huge gut. And I was, and so I looked and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to, going back to the business side, I'm going to get an MBA. A master's degree in finance. I took the GMAT. I was accepted to grad school to go get an MBA. And due to some life circumstances just that happened at this time in 2011, my life just kind of, I wasn't able to go to grad school. I was 2 weeks from starting my first day of grad school, getting an MBA finance, and just some life events had changed. And it was time to start a company. And so I decided, hey, I know construction. I ended up getting my license, my contractor's license, and started small. And unfortunately, even though I had a lot of construction experience and knowledge, the business side was fairly lacking, right? Just understanding how to price a job, understanding how to track, you know, in construction, we have, you know, WIP, work in progress, which is, it can be complicated accounting in the construction industry, you know, understanding job cost as well as overall revenue of the company, you know, net and gross profit, all these little things, right? And so that took some time, but that's really where I started. It's just, you know, it was out of necessity that supporting, I had 3 young daughters at the time. There were 7, 5, and 2. And just due to that, I couldn't go to grad school and we started AFT. And, you know, been very blessed, you know, very fortunate that here we are now. And it's taken a few years to get going, that's for sure.
What was one of the biggest fears or challenges that you experienced starting this company?
I think it's a fear that still today, I take a lot of pride, if you will, in just creating a lifeline, a support line for my team. So anytime I hire someone, you know, I think about their livelihood, for their family, their children, their spouse, and it becomes personal. So I think as a business owner, that's one of my biggest stresses. Do I always have enough work in the pipeline? You know, have we bitten off more than we can chew? Are they spending all their time at work, you know, and really thinking about that? And so as a business owner, you know, making that first hire is really hard. Knowing, when should I do that? How much should I pay them? Can I afford to hire somebody? A lot of us, you know, as entrepreneurs, you're doing everything yourself. So when's the right time to hire? And so my biggest challenge for sure early on was understanding how to be profitable, when to hire someone, and then do I have that pipeline now so that I'm not going to lose them and that they have a career path here with our company?
When is the right time to hire someone, or maybe even the first person? Because I think that's often, for most entrepreneurs and business owners starting out, is often the hardest hire.
It's funny because I speak to a lot of people about this, Dallin. And one of the biggest challenges is really, it goes back to the scheduling aspect. Before you get into hiring, you have to understand, what's the goal of the company? And it's, where do you value? And the reason I bring that up is, I'll give an exact case study right now. I have a peer of mine and he's a one-man band. I mean, he's running 8, 9 jobs himself. He's never hired anybody. And between you and I, he's done really well. He's made a great living because, think, he's not paying overhead. He has good financials he's making because he's run all these jobs. But again, at the sacrifice of his personal life or vacation time or time with his family, you know, that's kind of his pursuit. Whereas for me, it's been like, okay, you know, I value, you know, it's the value proposition is different. And it's not that anyone's better. I just want to be very clear. This is not who I am. I'm not judging anybody on how they want to operate. For me, I look at, you know, time for me is my value. And that means different things. How can I invest in certain things, invest in continuing education, maybe personal time, vacation, golf, whatever it may be. And so you have to understand, what is it that drives you personally, right? Is it travel? Is it a nice house? Is it just means? I mean, I come from a very blue collar home, so it's just different for everybody. So understanding that is really important, because then you can strategize a company and grow. Because some people just say, I want to be a boutique builder. You know, I want to be 2, 3, 4 people. It's great. We'll kind of have our little lane here that we work in and we're good. And some people say, hey, I want to have 30 people. But you just have to understand that first. And then for me, with my passion, it's like, I want to build in people. I want to invest in people. The reason I bring that up is because my mentor was Dave Clark. And when I was going through this personal thing and I'm starting AFT, this is a mentor that believed in me, that could have rode off into the sunset, was super wealthy. He took time to invest in me and help me get started with AFT and start the company. And I want to repay that. So I want to hire people. I want to build a brand. And that's been my goal structure. So going back to your original question, Dallin, I know I'm taking this a little long-winded, but the right time for me to hire was I had to get a couple sales in there. And I've always heard that if someone can do the job 60, 70% as good as you, essentially assign that, delegate that out so that you can focus on the business. And you know, the more time I can focus on the business, not in the business, the more successful we are. So the more people that I can hire, but at the same time, you have to understand, ideally, you know, you have to have savings. It costs money to hire. You have to have training. You have equipment. You have, you know, investment, especially that slow start. So you need to make sure you have some capital when you make that first hire, and then make sure you have a pipeline to keep them busy. And then eventually you can start focusing on the business and sales and create that balance.
How long was that time frame from the time you started until you brought on that first person?
Yeah, it was about a year.
So you were a little over a year. You were grinding. You were figuring out what you wanted the company to look like, your values, your vision. I mean, you as the owner, you've got to figure that out so that you can then effectively communicate it to whoever you're bringing on. So for that year, I'm sure you were doing, they were probably 16-hour days, 12, 16-hour days.
It's long days. And you know what? As an entrepreneur, they don't change. So I mean, I think there's still 12, 16. It's just, it looks different now, right? It's just different now to what it was then. But to your point, where I would completely agree, Dallin, and I think that's very insightful for anyone listening, is that even if you're one person operating your company at the time, understand what that organizational chart, that org chart will look like. Understand your SOP, right? Your standing operating procedures. You have the rhyme or reason why you do things, Dallin. I do too. Put that down. Write it down. Understand when someone calls me for a job lead, and then how you vet that client, how you price the job, how it's awarded, how it's contracted, how it's scheduled, how it's turned over, right? When the client's moving in, what's the process? Document that, because then when you hire someone, you actually have that already because you've been doing it, and it's a lot easier to not micromanage and let that go. And so the more information you can prepare for, and how it was for me is, yeah, I'm in the field, I'm a superintendent, I'm scheduling, I'm trying to do estimates, I'm trying to do bidding. And yeah, fast forward for me, you know, 15 months till we hired our first employee. And really, it wasn't a couple of years. I mean, it would have been 3 years after that before I could really, you know, hire someone else and get out of the field entirely. So I'd been in business 4 years before I was out of the field and then could focus on the business. And then, of course, from there, it's grown. And, you know, social media was a huge player for us to get our brand and insight and knowledge out there and really help us take off.
That's incredible. So you mentioned you have 21 employees currently.
Yeah.
What's typical volume that AFT does? To give our listener an idea of what you guys do.
Sure. So from a construction standpoint, and I'll just speak maybe not a yearly aspect, but as far as what's contracted in our backlog, what's under construction, and then forecasting, we're at like 140 million, right, in construction contracts that we're contracted for. And this is through 2026.
I've got to ask, what's you do custom homes, luxury homes, what's the average build of the homes that you do?
And I'm glad you asked that. So at the core, and this is what I tell my clients too, is that I don't care, Dallin, if you're spending $100,000 and I don't care if you're spending $10 million. And I really don't care if you're building a 2,000 square foot, 100,000 square foot home. I want to work for good people. You know, it's a tough industry and we provide a ton of value in our process. We provide a ton of value with our organization and the dedication of my team. Again, fortunately, knock on wood, I've been in business 10 years. We don't have turnover, right? We just don't. We have people that have been here. I have 4 employees that are former business owners that own their own companies that work for me now. And they're lifers, right? They're here for long run. And my 2 first hires, Adam and Sue, that started with me, they're still with me today, 10 years later. So we, you know, every job we get better, but going back to your revenue question. So we have our smallest home that we just finished was a net zero house, which means the house is off of the grid. I mean, it produces as much energy as it consumes. So it's totally independent because of the building science and efficiency of this build. Like, it was actually the National Home of the Year. Just amazing products, install, know how to build this house. It's off the grid in Arizona. That house was 3,800 square feet. Our biggest house, it's kind of two homes adjacent to each other, is 60,000 square feet.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's a big range. And we have, you know, most of our builds are probably, I don't know, 6,500 to 11,000 square feet, pretty common. But we have five that are over 20,000 square feet. So we do have some big ones in there. And, you know, price range, you know, most of our projects price, for, you know, 2 million up to in the 20. So wide range as well as cost.
What got you into this luxury home build, that this space here? Because there's some contractors and builders that will go for that production build because they can knock them out quicker. Like, what was it that made you go down this path versus the other?
You know, I guess the easiest way to say it, it's, you know, I'm really competitive, Dallin, and it's not competitive in like, hey, I'm doing the biggest and baddest. It's more, I like the challenge. And so for me to go into a project, like, I'll give you a couple examples. Again, I spoke about the net zero home. I've never done that. I've done some high efficiency, energy efficient homes. I've never done one that's truly net zero, right? That's off the grid, triple pane windows, insulated foundation, you know, the roof, the way the house was designed, the thermal enclosure. So it's just stuff that I had not done before. Move over. I have a client from South Dakota and they bought 14 acres and we have a driveway. This driveway is 1,000 feet. It's 3 football fields up the mountain on 14 acres. House is cantilevered, hanging off the mountain. You know, there's hard dig because we're digging into the mountain, and the building is like 4 separate structures connected with glass hallways. And then I have a house with 2 houses with lazy rivers. One of them has this incredible lazy river. It's a rectangle. So it's really complicated just in the pool design. And, you know, especially in just in understanding how the pumps and valves and everything's going to work with this pool design. And then another client who's looking at doing a go-kart track under the lazy river. So again, and, you know, trampoline barns and tennis courts and, you know, skate parks in these houses. And so it's fun because it's stuff that's most people don't even get to see, yet alone build, right? And when you're building a home that has a 50-foot opening with a multi-slider, all built with structural steel, to me, it's building. I think at the core of it, manufacturing, a lot of my projects have structural steel. So to go in and see that erection take place and the welding and, you know, see that steel going, and people are thinking, is that a school going in and it's a house? And just the complication and all the little details, to me, it's just the challenge of it. And so that's what I mean by competitiveness. It's just, it's fun for me to challenge our team, challenge myself and the company with these new projects that continue to get more challenging.
It's a lot more rewarding. And back to what you initially said, it's about the experience. Not only are you providing experiences for you and your team and the challenges, but you're creating incredible experiences for the families that you're building these homes for, because this is their dream home. Right? They don't come to you wanting something that they want, something very unique and specific. That's why they would approach someone like you. So you're helping them fulfill their dreams of having their home and lazy river and a go-kart track. My kids would absolutely love that. So I can see how that can be very rewarding and challenging, but it's what keeps you going. It's what gets you excited to get up in the morning and to keep going. Am I right?
Yeah. And what's interesting, Dallin, is, you know, I kind of took the aspect of just the competitiveness of trying to understand the experience of building, right? And these complicated jobs and, you know, to put your name out and see clients enjoy for a long time. But what I realize now, or what I realize now that I didn't taking this on, is that when you're going to attack working with this clientele, you know, and their portfolio, when you're going to attack this level of complication on a build, keep in mind, some of my builds are 5 years, you know, 2.5 years of design, 2.5 years of build. This is a long relationship. Understanding the amount of systems and organization and training that it takes with our team to make sure that everything's flowing, that things aren't getting missed. I mean, these are big dollars that, you know, mistakes can cost a lot of money. And so that's where I've realized from a systems and organization standpoint and implementing this with our team, it's just been absolutely crucial to get our company to here. Because I can tell you, even maybe from customers listening, 4 years ago, you know, there were mistakes we were making. There were issues. There were gaps. And we've been working on that and fixing that. So today we're a much different company. And that's really the pursuit, that every day, I know today we're going to be better than yesterday and tomorrow even better than today. And that's the goal, that we're continually tracking to find better ways to organize and complete these complicated builds.
And isn't that true just for business in general in life? Like personally, on a personal level, if you're better today than you were yesterday, then you're moving in the right direction. And so implementing that into your business, whatever it may be, is essential to experience that growth. So Awesome. We're coming up on time here, but share with our listener what's next for AF and any big plans?
Yeah, good question. So yeah, the next 5 years are going to be really exciting, actually. So I mentioned that we started the Coalition Summit. So again, the Contractor Coalition Summit, which they can search contractorscoalitionsummit.com. You know, this is just specifically for the industry, is that there's never really been a course, at least for me. When I started my company, like I said, all the bumps and bruises of understanding how to bid a job, how to price a job, how to schedule, how to hire, how to do social media, how to do marketing, you know, all these business core elements that no one teaches you, just figure out on the fly. And that's why so many businesses fail. We're teaching that. It's a 3-day summit and we're teaching. So that's been awesome. The continuing education and just giving back to the industry and building that. But and for AFT,
when are you launching that?
So last year we had our first two sessions. It was May in Nashville and then November in Huntington Beach, California. We're actually hosting one in May. So May 7th through 10th is in Scottsdale. And then if they go to the website in September, we'll be in Austin, Texas. And then we'll release next year's dates here shortly. So Scottsdale, May, and then Austin, Texas. In September. So that's great, just in educating the construction industry. And what's funny about that, Dallin, is in both sessions we've had, and we're having another one come up here in Scottsdale, is that we've had a lot of our competitors attend. And so that's been great, because for me, I'm like, hey, I don't mind sharing how I do business and my secrets, because if I'm surrounded by great builders, that's just going to help the industry. For AFT specifically, we will be expanding. And I can't share the markets yet, but although we've been in Metro Phoenix, we will be expanding to other markets in the US. Fortunately, we've had a great brand, and you know, we've had a lot of people reach out, will you come build my house? And the construction is pretty tough to just go remotely and build a home. But we're going to actually open up satellite offices and have branches of AFT, you know, brick and mortar there, where we're there permanently and we're there to service that city in the US. So we're pretty excited about that in the next 5 years.
That's super exciting. So how soon? When can we find out what those markets
are? Yeah. So our first one will probably announce in the next 8 months, and about a year and a half, we'll be opening our doors there. So yeah, it's coming up pretty quick.
That's exciting. A lot of good things happening for you and your company. Well, Brad, thank you for your time and sharing your experience and journey. We could keep going. I mean, these interviews I do are by far what I look forward to the most every week. And I can't believe how quick the time goes. By the time we get on and start talking, an hour goes like that. So appreciate your time and sharing your experience and knowledge with us. So let's go through these last final four questions that I like to ask every guest on the show. And the first one being, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
One thing that I loved, and again, my mentor gave me this when I first started. So Jim Collins, I don't know if any of you guests have shared this, but Good to Great, right? Why some companies make the leap and others don't. And I think that book by Jim Collins, again, we didn't get into the core of some of the information in that book, but this is really what takes you from good to great. And there is a big separation. There's a separation with great companies. And so that book's a stepping stone. And then definitely look at people outside of your industry as well and what they're doing to be successful so that you can set yourself apart.
Awesome. What has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
I think there's two. And one of them was from a sales rep. So right out of college when I was doing production homes, I remember he was the most generous guy. And he always told me, he said, Brad, generosity precedes prosperity. And he just lived by that. And he would share. I remember he'd come up and just shake my hand. It'd be a $20 bill, right? You know, for lunch or something. And he was just a sales guy at the subdivision. His name is Martin Ono. And, you know, just something little, be your birthday, he'd come give you something. And he just, I mean, again, not the wealthiest guy, he took care of everybody. And I can tell you that it went a long way. So generosity precedes prosperity. And I think that's all of us should be giving back and doing charity in some sort of part of it. And I think at the core, there's, again, you know, I complained because I had no shoes until I saw a man that had no feet. And I remember my dad telling me that when I was, you know, a young man. And it's just in life, I think it's really easy to, you know, the term keep up with the Joneses or always, you know, comparing other people. Social media, definitely we compare too much. And it's really easy to get our perspective and our goals out of realism. I mean, it's just not realistic, some of the things we're pursuing. And that's always humbled me to think, you know what, despite any trials or tribulation or challenges in my life, that, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot I can be grateful for. And it's not the expense of someone else. It's just that a lot of us have a lot to be grateful for. We just have to realize that.
We can always give regardless of where we're at in our lives or in our business. And some of the most successful business owners I've met are the most generous people I met. And I think it's because they've probably embodied this quote, generosity precedes prosperity. So very well said.
And the thing is, Dallin, yeah. And the thing is, like, if you're going to give when you don't have much, you know, that mentality, you're going to do that later in life too. And so once I get there, I'll do it. No, start now. Like, you can always start now. And maybe it's not money, maybe it's time. I mean, there's other things you can do.
Absolutely. Well said. So Brad, if there is one thing that you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
find a mentor. You know, I say chase experience, not money. I mean, part of that's going through, you know, the career path and making sure that you either working for a company or working for a brand, you know, chasing that experience. But I think more importantly, find a mentor, find someone that you're aspiring to be, figure out how you can surround yourself with people that are successful, because just by being around them, just by listening to them, there's going to be things you pick up on that you can apply. So I think mentorship is just something that's not utilized enough.
I agree. And this is my personal opinion for the listener. Yes, you can pay for these mentors, but if you can find the mentors that will mentor you because they see themselves in you when they were your age that aren't expecting anything in return, those are the ones that you want to connect with. Sure, you could pay for some mentorship groups and coaching programs. And I've known people that have done very, very well. But some of the best mentors in my life are not the ones that I've paid for. They're the ones that just showed up and they were there for me. So appreciate you sharing that, Brad. Hey, how can our listener learn more about you and your business?
So they can search us. AFT Construction is our Instagram handle, at AFT_construction. You know, Facebook and Pinterest, AFT Construction, LinkedIn. You can just look up Brad Levitt. Website is aftconstruction.com. I've had a podcast too for 3 years. So if they want to learn more about my business or just kind of my methodologies of my take on business, again, they can search the AFT Construction podcast or Brad Levitt. Should come up on any platform.
And that's not just construction, right? That's business. Correct. Entrepreneurship with some construction.
Yeah. I've had some guests that are in the construction industry, but I've had a lot of athletes on. I've had, you know, just guests such as yourself down, like people that just understand business, to understand marketing systems. And so I think there's a lot of value similar as you. It's like trying to bring out nuggets in every episode that people can take back and apply and use.
I don't know about you, Brad, but that sounded like an invite to be on your podcast. Is that what that was?
The invite's there. So we're going to be scheduling you to come on. So you better believe that's an invite.
Love it. Look, this has been an incredible conversation with Brad. And if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. My company partners with busy professionals just like Brad that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. At Rev, we found that the most successful business owners have a strong desire to give and serve. And we simply provide the vehicle to enable them to grow and preserve their wealth so that they can give of their time and financial success more abundantly and freely. If you've been wanting to get involved in apartment investing, but have been too busy to figure out where or how to start, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting investwithrev.com and schedule a 15-minute discovery call. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make apartment investing easy. Brad, again, thank you so much for your time and knowledge. And we got to get you back on in a few years once you get into these other markets and just to see where your growth has gone. So again, thank you so much for your time and taking time out of your morning to share your experience with us. It's been a blast.
Glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments, so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.